Welcome to episode 146 of Fretboard Rewind. My name is Spencer Lugenbuehl, and today my special guest is In the Money's very own Nick Tamaro. Me and Nick go over three races from this past Saturday's Kentucky Derby card at Churchill Downs, those races being 9, 11, and 12. And here are some angles that we talked about. Why you should give shippers a harder glance if they have run all out first time in North America, coming back for that second start. And how in the heck can we redboard Rich Strike's improbable win in this year's Kentucky Derby? This is Redboard Rewind. It's the same old story in this tug-o. We go back and forth, we go back and forth. It ain't good for me while we do this for. We go back and forth, won't do this no more. All we want, always have a tell it. 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 All we want. And now I'd like to welcome in my special guest for this week's Redboard Rewind. It's going over Kentucky Derby Saturday, so you already know who the guest is. It's In the Money's very own. It's Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Spencer. Glad to be with you. It's becoming an annual thing, right?
I mean, listen, if you told me no this time after you kind of put the kibosh on me for Thursday show, I was going to start feeling really, really sad and upset at that point.
No, I wouldn't do it to you. You know, yeah, I felt bad about Thursday. Had to back out of the Monmouth podcast, and the racing gods were on our side, though. They canceled the card.
Isn't that how it always seems ends up seeming to be? My God.
Exactly.
So let's talk real quick. Obviously, Friday, Saturday, two of the biggest days so far of the year. How did you end up overall? And obviously, we'll get into the three races we're going to talk about.
So I feel a little bad because I put my picks on the In the Money picks grid. And the one race I had not looked at was the Knicks Go because I was doing some work for Yard Barker, who's a partner of ours at In the Money, and it was just graded stakes. And so I had really focused on the six graded stakes on Saturday. So I put my picks on. I looked through the race very quickly. Well, then when I was actually in the announcer's booth at Sam Houston on Saturday, late in the morning for us, which was probably, you know, getting towards mid card at Churchill. And I texted a friend of mine and said, "Did you like anybody in this Knicks Go?" And he said, "No, I think it's pretty wide open." And so I handicapped the race and went through it and decided, you know, I'm just going to toss the favorites. I don't like Dream Shake. I don't like Shared Sense at a mile. And I went and watched the replay of the Commonwealth. And the first thing I said to myself watching it was, who is that horse who broke slowly and then spent most of the race on the inside? Well, it happened to be Three Technique. So I texted my friend back. I said, you know, I'm going to fool around with Three Technique underneath. I think he can get a piece. So I played some tries with him in the third spot. I boxed him in some exactas with the three other horses that I liked. And I played a tri wheel with those two of those three horses and him. And then I bet a few dollars to win on him. Well, you know, that made up for a long Friday.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't want to, and I was about to tweet and say, I really think Three Technique has a shot here. Of course, I would look like a genius, but I felt bad because everybody who you know, subscribes and saw the picks grid is going to be like, you didn't put Three Technique on the picks grid. But it's negligence on my fault for having not looked at the race more. I just didn't think that it was going to be one of the races. So, with that preamble aside, I had a very rough Oaks day. My multi-race bets were knocked out when New Year's Eve won the Edgewood. I thought that one of the Chads would get it done there. And then I played the Oaks basically for Oaks Derby doubles. I wanted to get alive to some of the pricier horses that I didn't really want to have to use terribly much in any kind of multi-race bet on Saturday itself. So I got alive to Crown Pride, Cyberknife, Charge It, and Tawny Port, who was a big price, who I thought, yeah, you know, maybe if there's chaos, little did I know. So that kind of worked out effectively. Secret Hills was one of the three horses that I used in the Oaks. And then, of course, my Derby day turned around at that point. Well, what that led to was me putting together an intricate set of pick six tickets that were all pretty much all live. I was live to the horses I wanted to into the Derby. But I will, spoiler alert, one of them was not Rich Strike.
Let's just talk just about, obviously, overall the 2 days. I find it so hard. You know, everyone wants to be in every single race. And I feel like for me overall, what's so nice about what Churchill does is they also mix and match pick threes and doubles that aren't on the same days or in the same sequence. So it's like if you really like certain stuff, you know, they have, what is it, the Derby and the Forester into the American Turf. They have the Oaks double with the Derby. Like, there's so many extra ways over these two cards where you can really find your opinion and make it work. How important is that for you when you're going over these big days?
It's important. You know, you want to get involved in these races because they do an incredible job putting together a competitive card with a lot of really good races. So, you know, you can't help but be intrigued by how much appeal there is in the undercard. And so, yeah, Churchill really branched out in the last couple of years, putting in a $2 two-day pick six that spanned all the grade ones. And, you know, those races were generally pretty approachable. You know, you knew you could probably get by with just Jackie's Warrior. I did a podcast with Marshall Graham about it. And you knew you could probably get by the first leg just being too deep, depended on how broad your Oaks opinion was. And then the Churchill Downs looked like a race where, you know, you might not have to go terribly deep. So there was some, you know, some opportunity there. Then there was an all dirt pick five on Saturday. There was an all 3-year old pick three. So, you know, they made sure that you had really a slew of opportunities to get involved in bets that ended with the Derby. And a lot of us did, and then we ended up watching a Derby that we won't soon forget.
One other question I want to ask you more for the newbie side of the approach. You obviously are one of the guys who does buyer speed figures for many and different tracks around the country. Why do you think buyer speed figures sometimes are just so overused? And what's the biggest tip or, like, you know, thing you can tell newbies to stay away from when they just want to try and look at buyer speed figures?
Well, I think availability is the biggest part of it, because most people, the majority of people, use the daily racing form where the buyer speed figures are there for the taking. The biggest piece of advice I would give anybody is use buyer speed figures. Use any speed figure as a guideline, not a rule, because they're as much art as they are science at times. And, you know, you can take races like, we're not going to talk about the Oaks, but, you know, in the Kentucky Oaks, Secret Oath ran a 94 buyer speed figure. She got a 103 Brisnet figure. So, you know, the 103 Brisnet figure actually gave her one of the higher Brisnet figures of the weekend. And, you know, you think to yourself, how is it possible? Brisnet figures are generated by a computer. But how is it possible that there could be such a dichotomy? And it's not as if Secret Oath was involved in some kind of hot pace that you might have upgraded the figure for. So you need to understand what buyer speed figures are. They're final time figures. They're based on the actual time, the final time. That's it. There's no influence for pace. There's no influence for weight. There's no influence for trips. Nothing. It's a final time figure. So it's very, very important when you're breaking down a race to understand how it was run, so that you can then correlate that to what the speed figure is. If you're looking at speed figures and you're just simply perusing the PPs and saying, oh, well, that horse has the fastest speed figures, boom, I'm going right to the windows, you're going to be playing, but you're not going to be playing for very long.
And I always feel like, you know, especially being, you know, with the NYRA team trying to teach new players and all that, they'll come up and they'll be like, well, this horse ran a 98, so obviously, you know, the next closest horse ran a 92, so this one should be the favorite. Why isn't he? Well, if you look at the last four times this horse ran 90 the race before, it plummeted down to a 40. Now, in my thinking, I would say, until this horse can prove to me that this horse cannot bounce off of a 90, I'm not going to play this horse after a 90. And I think that there's so many different ways, and just people break down buyers, whether it's, you know, the ladder where they go 60 to a 70 to an 80. They're supposed to bounce after that next one. I think there's just so many different ways you go with buyers. And I love the point that where, you know, so many people have rules for it. And it's like, just use it as a guideline. And for me, it's very difficult when, you know, I see people spread out on tables and they're using the you know, they're using Brisnet, DRF, and, you know, time form. Just like, how can you use so many different numbers? For me, that would just jumble it all up for me.
Yes, I totally agree. I think you need to fold in the speed figure that fits best with your handicapping style. Yeah. So, you know, if you're somebody that wants to break down the pace of a race when you get started to really understand how you think it's going to be run, then you're probably going to be best suited by a Timeform US type figure. And if you're somebody who likes to put a lot of emphasis on the horses that might have wide trips, then you want to look at Thoroughgraphs. And but I think if there's one figure that in terms of availability makes it the most approachable, it's the buyer figure, because you can find them easily, and they generally are. The buyer speed figure team calibrates them, so to speak, in a way that there's track to track uniformity. So, you know, you're supposed to feel confident that a horse that earns a 98 at Churchill can earn a 98 at Belmont. and you're supposed to understand what the difference is between a horse that earned a 96 at Fairgrounds and a 92 at Oaklawn. So within those, there are a number of different things that you can do. You know, when you're talking about a cheaper horse, if you're looking at, you know, at Finger Lakes on a non-Nyrick day, and you see a horse that maybe has ascending speed figures, but they might just be from 28 to 34 to 37, mm-hmm. you might upgrade that horse, right? I mean, you might say, hey, he or she is rounding back into form. So you can create your own approaches with them, but to take them simply as gospel would be that'd be a mistake.
Hopefully that helps out some newbies. Nick, let's jump into the first of our three races from this past Saturday at Churchill Downs. We're going to start with race number 9. It's the Grade 2 American Turf, mile 1/16 on the turf course. Lots of different ways to go in here. I just kind of thought overall, when I saw the price on Balanikov for Philip D'Amato and Manny Franco, listen, I'm a little bit nervous with Manny now in these big races. I feel like, you know, Tis the Law was kind of his horse, and like it's kind of, since then I haven't really seen him win, you know, in too many bright spots. I feel like this one having like one of the highest buyers coming out, and then I see the price at 6-1. It kind of made my eyeballs kind of blow up.
Yeah, he was a horse that I was struggling with, and you know what I did was I went and watched the race that he was coming out of. And I noticed that the race he was coming out of had a horse named Handy Dandy that was running back at Santa Anita on Friday. And I also noticed that there was a horse in the race that I had bet at Keeneland next time out named Durante. And so I thought, well, you know, we're going to get a decent window into how these horses ran and maybe what this Singletary that he was coming out of amounted to. And Durante came back and ran fourth, setting a slow pace, going long on the turf at Keeneland. And then Handy Dandy finished second. No real excuse, but his buyer dropped 11 points. So I kind of made a mental note that Balnikov was probably coming out of a weaker than par race for you know, $100,000 listed stake at Santa Anita, which was one of the reasons why I didn't use him. And so I also felt like generally I will not reuse Euros or foreign shippers of any type that run big first time in America. It's very, very rare that they reproduce that form or improve. It's really only Chad Brown and Christophe Clement that you can trust with that. And there are obviously some other marquee trainers, but they do it more regularly. They generally get the better supply of European-based horses. So the two horses that I kind of based on form lines and things that had happened since their last race that I took a critical approach of, the first was Balnikov, the other was Psydog. Mm-hmm. And so when Psydog was really getting pounded, I made a comment to Steve Bick on Friday that Psydog had beaten a horse named Napoleonic War, who finished fourth in the Transylvania, and he was best in the Transylvania. He had a brutal trip. He got locked inside for a while, lost his momentum, ended up outside, was really flying late. Well, he came back and ran into one other than on Thursday at Belmont, and he was absolutely positively all out with a perfect trip to run down a 20-1 shot for Todd Pletcher. So I told C. Bick, I said, Napoleonic War did all the running in the Transylvania, and he came back and barely ran a better race in an allowance race next time out. So y'all can have Psydog. I'm not going there. I think he's a horse who has very situationally been good. So what one horse that I was pretty stuck on from the beginning of the week and from the first time I looked at the race was Stolen Base. And that had a lot to do with the fact that he got beat up a little bit out of the gate in the race at Sam Houston. Obviously I'm rooting for Sam Houston horses whenever I can, but not necessarily betting on them. And then I thought he had a real excuse for the Jeff Ruby Stakes. In the Jeff Ruby Stakes, he was very close to a hot pace. And I don't blame Gerardo Corrales, who's ridden really well throughout the spring. You didn't want to be too far back knowing where Tis the Bomb was, but I think this horse just got put into a bit tougher spot early than he needed to be. And so I thought to myself, well, now with Pratt, he's going to be able to relax. It looks like there's real pace on paper. So I was on Stolen Base pretty much from the start.
Kind of give me your thoughts. For me, the horse that was so hard was Portfolio Company. Obviously, it did so well as a two-year-old and didn't run that well in the Breeders' Cup. And listen, it's Chad off a layoff. It's almost as good as gold sometimes. Joel on as well. I think I want Joel on more of the closing types than these horses that want to be up front. And just, I mean, there wasn't a spot since the Breeders' Cup they wanted to run this horse before the first Saturday, first Saturday in May. Like, that just seems like such a weird opening spot. But then again, Chad runs his horses sometimes only three or four times a year. So I didn't know what to make of this runner.
Yeah, and this is a horse that's similar to, like, a Public Sector from last year. In that they want to figure out whether he's going to be more of a Hall of Fame type horse, or is he going to be more of a Belmont Oaks type horse, you know, believing that he's of grade one, grade two caliber. So you have to figure that out by getting him started somewhere. And Chad is not afraid to run horses off the layoff in big races. I mean, think about Domestic Spending last mm-hmm. year and some of the fillies that he's running, ran Regal Glory and the Jenny Wiley. She wasn't off a huge layoff, but she was off a, you know, 3 month break. Shantisara was off a 6 month layoff. So he will do that. My problem with Portfolio Company was I thought he ran very poorly in the Breeders' Cup. Mm-hmm. And I know that I actually got into an argument with Andy Serling about this because he said to me, well, the pace is very fast and it completely collapsed. And, you know, he ran much better than you think. And I said, look, I'll grant that he ran a lot harder early than he ever had before. That I'll buy. But I hate the way he folded. So, you know, I used him. I felt like there was real reason to believe that he could be ready off the layoff. And so he was one of the three horses that I used in the multi-race plays. But I still don't exactly know who Portfolio Company is, because at this point, he's run four times. Mm-hmm. James Aloysius was better in his debut, and it took James Aloysius like 8 months to get back to the races, and he broke his maiden in his next start. And then he lost to Coinage when he was pace compromised. He lost to Annapolis, who ended up being looked like a really talented two-year-old. I don't even know if he's in training anymore. And then he ran the bad Breeders' Cup race. So I'm at a loss for exactly who Portfolio Company is before, you know, going into this race.
Let's see who can win this grade two right now. It's stolen base for Nick. For me, it is Philip Tomas Bolinikov. Let's see who gets it done right now. Coming.
And they're off. Bolinikov got pinched back soon after the start. Portfolio Company off to a good beginning. Red Danger is also there. Dowajak Chief from the outside post is hustled up to grab the lead. So it is Dowajak Chief from the outside post to the rail by the time they reach the first turn. Red Danger comes off the inside to track from second. Portfolio Company keyed up, racing third. And Coinage is tugging up as well, coming on four wide, up into fourth and now third. Stolen Basin behind them fifth, while Smoke and Tea saves ground in sixth. Red Run comes away in seventh. Main Event is eighth. Side Dog is ninth. And Bolinikov is the trailer. Heading to the back stretch run, the opening quarter goes in 23-4. Dowajak Chief shows the way. A precise length over Red Danger, who's content to track from second. Coinage is still keyed up on the outside while third. Portfolio Company has settled just a bit down inside fourth. Stolen Base is fifth and only four lengths off the lead. Smoke and Tea to that one's inside, about six behind with four furlongs to go. Then it's Side Dog and Red Run, Main Event, and Bolinikov. The opening half in 49 1/5 seconds. The run to the far turn. Dowajak Chief is still the leader, but Red Danger is revving up with a two-wide bid. Coinage is three-wide. Perfect trip so far for Portfolio Company. Fourth and toward the rail. Stolen Base is coming on four-wide, and Bolinikov with a five-wide blitz on the far turn. Off the turn into the stretch. Red Danger comes away with a narrow lead. Stolen Base to the attack. Bolinikov is there, and Portfolio Company with clear sailing up the rail. Smoke and Tea late on the scene with Side Dog down to the final 16th. Bolinikov's short lead. Stolen Base is going to fight to the finish. Stolen Base re-rallies. Stolen Base turns back Bolinikov.
And Stolen Base gets it done. 13-20, the winning mutual. The winning buyer figure of a 90. So this horse just jumped up and improved right back. It's nice when you kind of have an idea on Side Dog and the horse just finishes not a bad third, but a third in general with how much money this horse was taking. And I tend to agree with you on that. So horse is slowly improving. Usually you want to see more than 3 points of improvement from maiden to a fourth start. And this one still even just, you know, 6 points of improvement. We kind of know what this one is. It's going to be the slower improving horse that might take even two or three more starts until he breaks a 90.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair. You know, my concern with Stolen Base going in was that, you know, he was a horse who was collecting a hell of a lot more excuses than wins.
Yeah.
Right. And that was the worry. The thing that you obviously concern yourself with when, you're dealing with this type of horse is what kind of trip is he going to work out. Now, the interesting thing equipment wise was that Mike Maker, even though this horse was probably too close to the pace in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, opted to keep the blinkers on him. And it actually made a huge difference. So I heard afterwards, somebody said to me, and I did not know anything about this, but somebody said to me, had you heard about Maker apparently told some people in the media that there was, that this horse had a virus of some sort that presented itself right after the race, and he had mucus and things like that. And so that was the way you could just explain away his effort. And I had not heard that. I would have probably not believed it anyway, or I wouldn't have done anything about it, but it kind of makes sense because it's really the only bad race he's run now in his last six starts. So he was much closer. He was wide. You definitely wanted to be outside on that turf course. And he got a very heady ride by Flavian Pratt. I thought your horse, Balnikov, was going to go blowing by him with about a furlong to go. And he really dug in nicely and finished up very strongly.
And, you know, old me from the last couple of years on the podcast, if you've listened, I don't usually like taking horses that don't win coming into the U.S. If they don't win that first try, no matter how close, a nose, a head, however close they lose, I don't like taking them second time. I just, when we use the buyer speed figures as a guide, this one has an 88. I'm not saying the other horses hadn't run 88 in the race, but just 6-1, like, let me just take a flyer on this horse and hope to God that something can happen, especially with me having such a good background from Santander, from handicapping so many years for Scott Shapiro. Like, I knew Philip D'Amato. I knew what he could do. And this one, to me, you know, when I watched that race back, I'm just like, damn. Like, he came right back, ran 87. I mean, so I can't really be mad at the horse. Stolen Basis ran a really good race. Obviously, we were both kind of right about Psydog. Portfolio Company comes back with an 82. I don't know what to, like, I feel like this horse, just like every time I see him in the race, just a big duh. Like, I just don't know what to do with this horse.
Yeah, and he had a good trip. The excuse for him is that it seemed, as the weekend played out, that you wanted to be nowhere near the inside of that turf course. Mm-hmm. Now, Churchill installed a new turf course for this year, and apparently this grass had been growing for a while elsewhere. They had not run on the turf since the end of last year's spring-summer meet. And so the first week, the first, I think, four cards, they ran with the rail at 24 feet. They took the rail down for Oaks Day, and it just became a total outside-moving course, and it actually... It brought back memories of the old Churchill wet turf courses from the fall, where when it got wet, you needed to be wider. And so a race that you can remember, that pretty much anybody can remember, is the 2018 Breeders' Cup Turf, where Enable and Magical are literally like 7 and 8 paths off the rail, and they're battling it out in the middle of the turf course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it looks really good. The riders said nice things about the turf course afterwards, but it's completely unclear at this point if it doesn't have the same type of profile where once it rains, all of the heavier grass starts to settle towards the inside, and that makes it a real advantage to be outside. So, you know, I would give Portfolio Company one more chance, and you're really going to know what Chad Brown thinks of this horse by whether he's in the Pennine Ridge. If he's in the Pennine Ridge, then he's a horse that Chad thinks still has graded stakes caliber ability. If we're looking at the entries at Belmont in 4 to 5 weeks and he's in a one other than, for example, that one other than on Belmont Day, the public sector one, mm-hmm. there's always one on either. It's either on it's on Belmont Eve usually.
Yeah.
And Chad won it with Bricks and Mortar. He won it with Raging Bull. He won it with Public Sector. If he's in there, then you know that he's going to take the more conservative route with Portfolio Company moving forward.
Let's move on to the next race. Race number 11 from this past Saturday at Churchill Downs is the Grade 1 Old Forester Bourbon Turf Classic. 1 1/8 miles on the turf course. One of the first horses that I kind of just looked at overall, just from the one post, Ivar. You look at all those nice triple-digit buyers, and he's got a 97 in there, which, listen, isn't bad half the time. It was with a slow pace, but that was at 1 1/8. And I'm not saying that I give that, you know, a negative, but just when you see a bunch of triple-digit buyers, now it's below that, you know, can he stretch out and do it? I guess he's obviously bred to do it, I would think. Sunday Silence and 409 Tomlinson for the distance. But just that one race not being up to snuff with the other races had me a little bit nervous. I mean, I ended up on Cheryl's Spite. I just thought the most in form, just that this one had just won a grade one, was fit for the race. A horse like Cavalry Charge at a price had just run back-to-back buyer tops. I don't want that one. I thought Mirror Mission with anyone else but Julian Leperu, and listen, Julian's won two of the last races on the horse. I imagined if I didn't play this horse would win, and if I played it, would finish dead last, because for some reason on big stake days, Julian Leperu closing on a turf course or just going to the lead beats me every single time, so I just wanted to stay away from that horse. But I didn't like anything else in this race. I thought that was just kind of what was left and what was, you know, Tribute Van winning the Fort Marcy with a 103. I mean, that was at this distance, but I mean, the last couple of races haven't looked as good. I just ended up on Cheryl's Spite, and that was just kind of where I just got stuck in.
Yeah, I picked Tribuven. I didn't have I probably am still a little, I don't exactly know what the right word is. I guess fooled by how well he ran in that 3-race stretch last summer. And I thought to myself, you know, he's going to be ridden with intent, and the other two potential speed horses in here aren't. Busy Channel's Rider will defer because they've tried to turn this horse into more of a stalking type, mm-hmm. and Cavalry Charge will be ridden similarly. So I thought to myself, you know, Tribuven is going to get the lead, and we'll see how far he can go. That was my thought. And as it ended up, he got exactly the trip I envisioned. I mean, he was on the lead. He was loose. He was comfortable. The middle fraction felt like it was moderate. But I also just don't know if we know anything about that turf course. And I don't know, you know, what's going to end up happening as time goes by. And so the really exaggerated margins in this race, well, we'll talk about it after we play the replay. But that was my thought process going in. I also had plenty of respect for Public Sector, who I thought the fact that he was scratched from the Maker's Mark Mile to go here, I thought was a positive. Mile and an eighth was a good distance for him overall. And so I felt pretty strongly that he would run well. Cheryl Spite scared me more than anything else. I was concerned about him coming back 3 weeks after that big Maker's Mark Mile effort, mm-hmm. but he ran so well that I wanted to use him. And then as far as a fourth horse, I used him as a B, but my fourth horse was Santine, who I felt like, you know, Brendan Walsh was obviously going very well coming into this race. And this is a horse who, he didn't really have any big excuses in his two races at Fairgrounds. He was probably a little too close to the pace each time, and I wondered how much that sharpened him up. But now I thought the cagey move on Walsh's part was putting the blinkers on, because it seemed to me like they probably trained him in the blinkers and used it to adjust his running style. And that looked like something. This is a horse who I thought showed an immense amount of talent as a 3-year-old. So I was intrigued by what he could do now with a few races in his form cycle.
The last question I want to ask you is just on the favorite, Adamo. Obviously, Chad Brown Flavia, and everyone's going to flock to those horses. 96 the last time out in the Fairgrounds, grade 3. But just, when you're 9x13, I see red fractions, and you end up, you know, running second by a head. You had the absolute trip of trips and still couldn't get it done. I mean, this horse at 5-2, 2-1, I want no part of. Just keep pounding the money there. And listen, I think Flavian Pratt's the best rider in the country right now. That's, you know, nothing against IRAD and them, but I think when he comes here later in the year, I think it's just going to be an absolute bloodbath between those two. And I just didn't want anything to do with this horse in this type of race.
I totally agree with both of your parts of that. I didn't care for this horse. I thought he was, I think everybody was reading into the big closing kick that he showed at Fairgrounds, and we're looking at the fractions, but not understanding that, you know, a midwinter turf course at Fairgrounds can often carry a great amount of moisture. Mm-hmm. So the designation of firm was ridiculous. I mean, that course was probably much more along the lines of good to yielding. And you know that by the fact that Craig has those fractions coated red, mm-hmm. because 49-3 and 114, basically 114 flat, was fast. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he was not a horse that I had any great affinity for. The other thing, and I know Chad ran two horses in the Mervyn Muniz, but it made very little sense to me that Chad ran this horse in the Fairgrounds handicap and did not run him back in the Mervyn Muniz. So especially with him missing by a head, I know he ran Sacred Life and Devamani in there, but Sacred Life and Devamani that's the travel squad, right? That's not the number one, group. So mm-hmm. yeah, I took a critical approach of this horse as well. And I totally agree with you on Flavian Pratt. I had watched enough Santa Anita to know enough Southern California racing to know he was really good. He's actually quite a bit better than I thought.
Let's see who can get this grade one. It's Public Sector, a little bit of Santine for Nick. For me, it's going to be the number 6, Cheryl Spite. Let's see who gets it done. right now.
And they're off. Santon's that outside post, breaks alertly, mid-pack, mirror mission is away well. Trepuvin toward the inside, public sector's pulled back off the pace, busy channel holds that spot down toward the inside. Bias for the first time, Trepuvin is out to set the pace, Santon runs up into second. Busy channel tucked away third and at the rail. Mirror mission is coasting along while fourth. Shrillspite comes on to be fifth. Public sector toward the inside sixth. Cavalry Charge is seventh. Adamo is two or three wide in eighth, and it's five lengths back to Kentucky Ghost, who is the early trailer. They are chasing Trepuvin, who leads by a length and a half, heading for the backstretch run. Santon is content to stalk from there. Busy channel reserved at the rail while third. Mirror Mission nudged along in fourth. They're only three lengths off the lead. That opening quarter goes in 24 and 1. Then it's a margin of five back to Shrillspite and Public Sector. Adamo is second to last with Cavalry Charge. Make that third to last. It's a long way back to Kentucky Ghost, who's at least 12 lengths behind. The opening half mile goes in 49 seconds flat. Trepuvin heading for the far turn in command. In control by 2.5. Now make it three. Trepuvin hits the far turn run opening up. With that, Santon is asked to go and takes up the chase from second now. Busy channel toward the inside is racing third. Mirror Mission is fourth. Adamo is picking it up from the back of the pack, going past horses quickly. Shrillspite's going to stick to the inside route, followed by Public Sector. Off the turn into the stretch. Trepuvin still the one to catch. They're closing in quickly, though. Mirror Mission coming fast down the center of the turf. Santon goes with that one. Then it's Shrillspite. Adamo's back and forth. One furlong to go. Mirror Mission digging down deep. Santon trying to get by once again. Santon's re-rallying. Mirror Mission responds right back. It's going to be close. Here's the wire. Santon got it.
One. And Santon gets it done. 101, the winning buyer. 16-20, the winning mutual. Nice little price there. You know, listen, Julian Lipper almost did it to me by me not playing this horse, and I was almost kicking myself at the end of it. I'm happy that, you know, Shrillspite didn't run as well, I guess, because if those two ended up in an exacta, I would have been just absolutely kicking myself.
Yeah, you know, Mirror Mission was a horse that I saw a lot of people picking, and now I used him a little bit in the Maker's Mark Mile, but if you would have told me going into that race that Santon was going to be 7-1 and Mirror Mission was going to be 8-1, I would have told you that it was taking place in an alternate universe. I mean, I would have never believed that whatsoever. So I guess maybe Mirror Mission was the quintessential universal good thing, because I saw a lot of people picking him, and I thought he ran a very even race in the Maker's Mark Mile, and he was 5 feet in length in the three quarters because, I mean, the field basically crammed together shortly before the wire. So, you know, but that being said, he ran very well. And it's similar to the American Turf, which we talked about. It looked in mid-stretch like Mirror Mission was going to go on to win, and Santon came back to beat him. Here's the crazy thing about this race, Spencer, is you had – if you want to take out Kentucky Ghost and Cavalry Charge and Busy Channel, the other six horses were very evenly matched, right? They went off between 2-1 and 8-1.
Yep.
And the totally insane thing about this was it was 19 lengths from Santon to Public Sector.
Yeah.
That doesn't pass the smell test. There's something there that was, I generally loathe when trainers use the, well, he didn't handle the track excuse. I especially hate it when a horse runs well and the connections come back and say, oh, well, he didn't even handle the track. It was like, right. So if he handled the track, he would have won by more. You know, I find it to be nebulous and sort of stupid, but I think a lot of horses didn't handle this turf course. I don't know if maybe it was because it was wetter than we anticipated, or maybe the inside paths weren't quite as good, but there's no way that two horses in this race were supposed to peel off six lengths in front of everybody else, especially not a 7-1 and an 8-1 shot, who basically, if that group of six I just mentioned, they were the fourth and sixth choices of that group. So that being said, I think what we do know is that Santon is a horse that has taken a clear step forward as a four-year-old. I think the discussion is that he'll be in the Manhattan, and I look forward to seeing him there in some deeper waters.
Two quick things for me. Obviously, Shrillspite coming back, you know, had the quote-unquote three improving races. Obviously, the layoff is in there, but had topped off with the 104 last time out. I guess that was just one too many races. Now, just second off the layoff, we see the bounce. Maybe now you want to bet this one next time, hopefully at a decent price. I love it that we're both right on a horse like Adamo, and this is kind of the thing. Like, you know, this is why I use Formulaire a lot. If I see red fractions in closing, I write an instant arrow down next to that buyer and just say this horse will probably regress. He did, down to an 89. And I think overall, I just, me missing out on Sanson and just seeing that slow progression for Brendan Walsh, maybe I was worried about the outside post, but I'm not going to give myself too many excuses to miss out on that one. You know, Mirror Mission running three straight 100s. I mean, this horse is here to stay, and I don't even think Julian Leperu can mess that one up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't have anything against that. I think Julian gave Mirror Mission a good ride, all things considered, and he just came up a little bit short. He's probably better a little bit shorter, whereas Santon is probably more of a classic distance type of horse. And Brendan Walsh, you know, what can you say about the job that he's done? His horses have run well in Kentucky now for the last 5 weeks, and he had two wins in stakes races, graded stakes races, over the weekend. So he's a phenomenal trainer, man. And I think people noticing him on a national stage is a welcome addition to the training ranks. And there's no question, and I'm sure he'd be the first to tell you, he's getting better horses than he ever had before. Mm-hmm. So having an affiliation with Godolphin helps a lot, and getting a horse like this. I mean, even young guys like you remember this horse's dam, right? Sentiero Italia. Mm-hmm. She only ran 7 years ago. She was the 2015. She was in the 2015 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf, won by Stephanie's Kitten. So I think she won a grade one that year. I think she won the Garden City. So this is a really, you know, really good Godolphin homebred. And he's a nice horse. So it ends up being, this is one of my favorite races of the year in and year out. It's this race in the Manhattan. You know, I know they immediately precede the races that everybody sort of tuned in for, but it's a fun division usually, and they're run it at interesting distances. This wasn't the most robust field from top to bottom in terms of talent, but we are a little talent weak in terms of distance turf horses right now, but that'll change, I imagine, in future years.
And now let's move on to the last race of this pod. It's the race everyone in the world was there to see and listen to. Race number 12 from Churchill Downs. It is the Grade 1 Kentucky Derby, 1 1/4 miles on the dirt. And, you know, Nick, I was listening throughout the week and just trying to figure out, and a lot of people were down to, like, I think 3 or 4 horses, and I was kind of the opposite, where I kind of thought maybe half the field could win this, because when I got down to the nitty-gritty, I definitely liked Epicenter on top. But I for sure thought that horses, you know, like Charge It was interesting to me. A little bit of Zandon, obviously. Taeba was one that I was willing to toss and just hope that I was right that 3 starts is, you know, maybe 1 too soon for that type of race. But I was always a fan of White Abario and a horse like Zozos as well. And I think that overall, when I looked through my main contenders and just horses like that, you know, I was tossing horses like Mo Donegal, who unfortunately got the rail, Happy Jack, just certain horses that you just know from the Derby you can just toss automatically. But at the end of the day, I felt so chalky. I just ended up on Epicenter on top, and I tried to use a little bit of Zozos underneath, and I didn't want to be too chalky and trying to use, you know, Zandon with everyone. So at the end of the day, I just kind of mixed in my Florida horses, my Zozos from Fairgrounds, and I just put Epicenter on top and just tried to mix stuff in there.
Yeah, I took a pretty similar approach in the sense that I just thought Epicenter was the best horse. Mm-hmm. I thought that he had run the best races consistently, and I really thought his Louisiana Derby was a very strong and very underrated performance, sitting behind Zozos and Pioneer of Medina, and then coming around them to win going away. All the reports were that he was training well, and Steve Asmussen made some comments during the week that hinted at him being very, very confident. So I was, of the favorites, I was more critical of Zandon than Epicenter. Mm-hmm. I thought Zandon was being a little overrated in terms of the bluegrass, where, you know, I was a little dubious of the competition that he faced that day. I thought he got a very, very kind run through to ultimately get to the front. So I was a little concerned about him being overbet. Well, then the crazy thing about the way the betting shook out was that, to me, the horse that I wanted no part of was Taeba. And yeah, so the fact that he was getting such an incredible amount of money really added to the appeal as far as wagering on the race went. So, you know, I tossed Taeba altogether. I didn't use him for a nickel. I felt like he was the horse that really got the benefit of the setup in the Santa Anita Derby, sitting behind his stablemate and Forbidden Kingdom. And Messier was the one who had to basically had custody of Forbidden Kingdom in the first 6 furlongs of that race, making sure he didn't get too far away. And Taeba was set for Taeba. So I used Messier, I used Epicenter, I used Crown Pride because I believed in the the Japanese training method and how impressively he was coming into the race by all accounts. I used Cyberknife, who also had trained very well, and I thought maybe ran a slightly better race in the Arkansas Derby than he did. And I used Charge It and Zandon as my sort of next step horses, basically as Bs. And then my C line was Simplification, Mo Donegal, and White Abario. So that was where I kind of stuck them in the bottom rungs of it. And yeah, I will admit I got alive for 40 cents in the pick six to eight different horses. I did not make a particularly big investment, so it was going to be a very nice return. I was alive in the pick five as well. You know, I probably bet a total of $250 to $300 on both of those and was alive to Zandon and Epicenter for 10 grand. So it was not a fun finish to the stretch drive.
One thing I wanted to ask you as well before, and this is more of just an overall context for the Derby and the Derby system going forward. I think for me, seeing a horse like Teva get in, obviously with that nice win second time, you know, listen, third race you want to go to the Derby, go right ahead. But for me, a horse that, and listen, I'm not saying you shouldn't allow horses into the Derby, but like for Happy Jack with a high buyer of an 83 to get in off two thirds, is there a way you think that we can make the point system maybe not so back heavy with so many points going the later races? Do we almost even it out so every race equals the same amount, or does that hurt it because now a horse that might peak in February gets in with a 50 point race? Like I just, for me, I think there's a better way of doing the point system. I love the point system. I think it's a lot better than having sprinters come in and go 43 and a quarter and, you know, just blow the whole race up like we've seen time and time again. But what would you do if you could make a couple switches around with the Derby point system?
I'd probably cut any races run the prior year to like a 5-3-1 point mm-hmm. total. Yeah. So the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, the Kentucky Jockey Club, the Remsen. I wouldn't even start until the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
So because you shouldn't, you know, what you do as a 2-year-old really shouldn't be terribly relevant. Now, I understand from Churchill's perspective, you want to put some marketing into races like the Iroquois and, and get the Derby conversation started as early as possible. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. Those are all 5 points to the winner, in my opinion. Then the first round are like a 10-6-3. And then from there, the second round is like a 25-12-8. And then the last round is 50-25-10, you know, somewhere in that mm-hmm. range. Basically so that, you know, now if you win the Risen Star, you're in the Derby field.
Yes.
And if you run second in any of the UAE Derby, Jeff Ruby Stakes, Wood Memorial, Santa Anita Derby, Bluegrass, Arkansas Derby, you're in the Derby field. So what I would want to do is decrease the number of horses that earn almost guaranteed spots because of one race.
Yeah.
So, and in a, you know, obviously the graded earnings system was going to go by the wayside. And I think they saw the forest for the trees. And I think Churchill does an incredibly good job with all things Derby because, you know, you can't require Santa Anita where, you know, purse money is at a little bit more of a premium to maintain the purse level of the Santa Anita Derby when Oakland can make the Arkansas Derby purse $3 million.
Yeah,
right. I mean, they have all the money in the world. So I think they handle it the right way. You know, I think in most years, people would scoff at the idea that the Jeff Ruby Stakes was a 100-point race. And I mean, you know, that's a different conversation now. But that would probably be my first change. I would also put points back on races like the Bayshore, mm-hmm. the Swale, the Hutchison, the San Vicente. The Oakland used to run a race called the Mountain Valley that I think they have a different one. I would put some sprint points back. Now, I wouldn't put them to be enough to get into the field, but I would definitely give trainers the opportunity to advance their horses distance-wise. And so I would choose some January and February. Bayshore is probably not the right race in New York, maybe a prep along the way. Mm-hmm. But I would give them the opportunity to use a graded race early in the year that is at a sprint distance to get their colt or gelding started. And so that's another slight change that I would make because I think there's a there's a big difference between giving a sprinter an opportunity to get 10 points in the Hutchison versus getting enough graded earnings in that kind of race and then being in the field.
I couldn't agree with you more there. But it, actually, if for me and you, it ends up being a top pick of Epicenter in the Derby. Let's see if he can get it done or if there is a climactic underdog to win it all in this year's Kentucky Derby.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. Good beginning, and Summer Is Tomorrow takes it to him right off the mark. Straight to the front, and Crown Pride is showing speed too. And Messier is not far behind either. Taba toward the outside, past the Twin Spires for the first time. Summer Is Tomorrow, setting the pace down inside, and Crown Pride is going to stalk the pace on the outside in second. Zozo's comes on to be third. Messier with a great spot toward the rail in fourth. Cyberknife comes away in fifth. Taba's racing in sixth. Charge It in tight toward the rail while seventh. Epicenter comes out racing in eighth. Smile Happy is ninth. Pioneer of Medina on the outside in tenth. Zandon toward the inside 11th. Pratt is patient with him. And then it's White Abario racing in 12th. Classic Causeway far off the pace today in 13th. Tawny Port is 14th. Simplification is 15th by 3. Tis the Bomb is 16th. Ridge Strike is 17th. Mo Donegal lingering near the back of the pack in 18th. Followed by Barber Road. Happy Jack is the trailer. Down the backstretch run, a merciless pace, 45 1/5 seconds in the Kentucky Derby. Down the backstretch they go. Summer Is Tomorrow, Crown Pride, and now Messier splits them and comes on through. Here's Messier now taking the lead for the far turn run. Crown Pride tries to go with Messier. Epicenter is on the move now. Epicenter is making progress as they round the far turn, and Cyberknife is there too. So too Smile Happy. Zandon is picking through the pack. Zandon is switched on, and here he comes. Charge It is there. White Abario coming with a wide sweeping move. Taba's trying to find a way through, as is Tawny Port, as the field turns for home at Churchill Downs. Epicenter running for the roses. He turns for home in front by 3, but Zandon is digging in, and here comes Zandon now. Zandon's closing in quickly. Simplification is late on the scene. Tawny Port and Barber Road, final 16th of the Derby, and it's still Epicenter. Zandon surging, and here comes Ridge Strike down toward the inside. It's a wild finish in the Kentucky Derby, and on the wire, Ridge Strike does it. Wow!
And Rich Hill, or Rich Strike, gets it done.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill. 80 to
Are you
1.
A Mets fan, Spencer?
No, I'm not, but we'll have to. Okay. Now we're going to keep it in at that point because I just can't get out of it. 163-60 the winning mutual. Rich Strike, 101. Listen, it's about as close as Rich Hill throwing a no-hitter in baseball. 101 the winning buyer, like I said. Me and you drooling down coming down the wire. And this horse just comes out of nowhere. Just a wonderful ride by Sonny Leone. And, I mean, everyone, nobody can redboard this horse. Thank God we have this show. My main thing for this race is when they go 45, I don't think there's many derbies that have gone 45 since the point system, and I could be completely, completely off my rocker there. But just when they go that fast, everyone backs up, and that just makes it exactly what it is. And I guess I had heard from a couple other people that Timeform had this horse as the best closer as well. So there you go. There's your epitome for an 80-1 shot to win the Derby.
Yeah, you know, we learned all that, of course, afterwards. I think the start of it with this horse is he wasn't in the field until Friday morning. And he didn't get in until Ethereal Road scratched. So he was an 11th-hour entrant into the field. He was a horse that most people didn't take seriously because, quite honestly, his form didn't deserve for him to be taken seriously. He's a horse that had never posted a speed figure over a number that would be considered a fringe player candidate for a grade 3 prep race.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was a series of events that enabled him to win, all of which had to happen. And they all did, including an incredibly fast pace. I mean, a wildly fast pace. Mm-hmm. The fastest pace we had seen in 9 years. And on top of that, he had to get what was arguably one of the most professional and incredibly fortuitous rides that a jockey could possibly deliver. Every decision that Sonny Leone made was perfect. And when he needed a space, he got it, even if he waited. And saving that every inch of ground that he did along the way enabled him to run down Epicenter and Zandon. For me, in this forum where we're talking about post-race analysis, you pick apart the race itself and the pace and who moved when and who was where after a certain point in the race. And the biggest takeaway by a mile is, I mean, Epicenter was many, many lengths best. And that doesn't do you any good at the windows. And it certainly won't make Steve Asmussen sleep any better, who now has his third second place finish in the Kentucky Derby in 11 years and second in 5 years. But Epicenter was very good. He ran very, very well. He's clearly, to me, the best of this generation. And I'm looking forward to him having an opportunity to really firmly cement himself the Eclipse Award favorite, hopefully in the Preakness. I thought Zandon ran well. He looks like a horse who's topped out distance-wise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the big worry with him moving forward. So, you know, you would generally consider Chad Brown to be the type of guy that would come out and say, you know, we're going to go to the Belmont. But I think he knows that as well. Chad's obviously very intelligent and knows his horses very well. I think he knows that the upstart and really sprinty dam side has probably caught up to this horse. And because, I mean, I don't know about you, but when they turned for home, I thought Epicenter was going to win by three. I thought it was going to be a Barbaro-like performance. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not surprising that that didn't happen, basically because of everything he had dealt with along the way. And then there came a time in mid-stretch where you thought Zandon was going to press on by. And he hung a little. Epicenter dug in a little. They both were tiring. So I don't want to hold it against either one of them. I certainly don't want to hold it against anything against Epicenter. But, you know, here you had Rich Strike, who had gotten all of the breaks that he needed in order to get there, and he did.
I think overall, too, like when you look at just, first of all, the pace, 45, the horse that really held on the best was Epicenter from eighth. And my fiance, who has had, you know, she picked Manaloon the year before, she picked Authentic, she was riding the high, and it was kind of a funny moment for me when she saw Messier go out for a 45 flat, and I just hear her mutter an F word under her breath. I was like, having not taught her too much about racing, but her even knowing that 45 is not a number you want to see flashed up there with six horses battling for the lead in the Kentucky Derby was quite funny for me. I think overall, when you look at it, Simplification, I thought, ran very well. I thought Mo Donegal from the rail to run that well, I thought was very surprising. And all my other horses, I mean, White Abario didn't run well, Charger didn't run well. I was pretty much right about one horse, Epicenter. And at this point, I think when it comes to the Derby, yeah, sure, I can focus on trifectas and exactas, but I've done so well at finding the second place horse every single year who could or possibly win the race. I'd save money in the long run not trying to find these other longer shot horses to go with it.
Yeah, you might be in line for an all over your pick next year. that might be worth it for a buck for $19. I'm just going to find out who your top pick is and do it for myself and see if we can't cash on that. But no, what you're talking about is really, the chart is fascinating because you've got the top seven finishers in this race. And after a half mile, the winner was 18th. The fourth place finisher, Simplification, was 15th. Mo Donegal was 17th. Barber Road was 19th. Tawny Port was 14th. The only closer who didn't really make up any ground was Happy Jack. And Epicenter at that point was 5th.
Yeah.
Zandon was 9th. Then at the three-quarter mark, so with just a quarter mile to go, with four furlongs to go, Rich Strike was 15th. Simplification was 11th. Mo Donegal was 14th. Barber Road was 17th. Epicenter was first. Zandon was 4th.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are horses that moved very aggressively into this very strong pace. And Epicenter did so with even more interest and more, I should say, in a more expeditious way. That it was a tremendous losing performance. It was the best performance in defeat in the Kentucky Derby for me since Bodemeister. And that was probably one of the best losing performances since from Bodemeister. It goes back to Congaree. So, I mean, these are horses that ran very, very well and ended up on the short end of it. But, you know, we're recapping, obviously. So I thought Simplification's effort was very good. I was surprised he was as far back as he was. As it ended up, it was definitely the best option in terms of giving him a chance to win. He's probably a horse that can be much closer. He's going to have John Velasquez for the Preakness. At the time we're taping this, it's been made clear that that's where he's going. And so you know, it'll be very interesting to see where he ends up in there. So you have that part of it. Mo Donegal ran okay, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. He is a horse that one of the things that Irad and Ray Lou did in this race is that they knew they were on dead last closers. They knew they were going to have to make up a lot of ground. They made no effort to save ground at all. I mean, they both decided the hell with it. We're going to cover it all. You know, we're going to go around everybody. And that's just so hard to do.
Yeah.
It's so hard to get there when you do that. You lose so much ground. And the concern that I have with Mo Donegal is that when Irad has been on him, he has either looked, he's run in spots. And then this time he just kind of, you know, he just kind of went through the motions. So I almost want to see him a more productive horse early in a race like the Belmont, which I think he's dangerous in based on his running style and what we've seen from him so far. But this was for me, his fifth place effort was just okay. It was not much better than that. Same thing with Barbara Road. I think mm-hmm. they're both going to end up in the Belmont. You know, the old thought that closers run well in a mile and a half, don't necessarily buy that. But yeah, that was kind of, I tweeted earlier today, I thought Smile Happy actually ran a lot better than I realized in first watching it. He was never that far out and ended up finishing eighth. I think that he has topped out distance wise as well, and he probably needs a cutback. Boy, if I owned him, he would be cut back to the Woody Stevens and Rosario would get on him and you know, just hope that they fly in front of you. So I'm thinking of Tom's Ready and Still Having Fun mm-hmm. when it comes to that type of situation. So that's it. You know, I would cut Taba back. I think he'll probably be most effective around one turn. If I owned Messier and he was healthy, I'd run him right back in the Preakness. Mm-hmm. I know he was up close to that hot pace and he tired badly late, but that pace was brutal. And I don't know if we'll end up seeing a Derby pace quite that fast. There's two things, Spencer, that are going to happen with regards to this race in next year's running. I don't think the pace will be nearly as fast, number one. And number two, nobody's going to go off better than 40 or 45 to 1 because everybody's going to be looking for the long shot.
And I love that mention so much because for people that think that this horse is 80 to 1, this horse should have been 8,000 to 1 for a lot of people. I mean, this
got that right.
It's still an underlay, and he's the biggest winner in the Derby, you know, since I've been watching it. I think overall, and this is for people, beginners who or people who are just using Formulator, there's two quick notes you make. You say, closers crushed late, bet like speed horses completely compromised. That's the quick and easy dirty note you can make for this race. If you're the owner, I mean, how many horses do you send to the Preakness now? I mean, I just think overall, if you're already somewhat distance compromised or worried about it, I'm sending every last bullet of ammunition to the Preakness. Like, I'm not saying that we're going to have the biggest field ever, but they should fill that gate out quite easily with this horse, you know, going through. And listen, if he wins that race and now he's up for a triple crown, I would almost wonder if they don't run that horse in the Belmont. I know it would never happen, but I think that would be the most amazing thing to see happen when they just know that horse maybe can't get a mile and a half.
Oh, I think there should be 14 in the Preakness and 16 in the Belmont, which are the max field sizes. There should be no one that fears anyone. And you know, Asmussen said it already with regards to Epicenter, what they're focused on now is figuring out how to get the Eclipse Award.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they know, you know, you've got a couple of new shooters potentially that'll pop up. You never know what kind of horses are just getting started that might be good by summertime. Jack Christopher is back on the scene now. We don't know where he'll top out distance wise, but we know that the Chad Brown long range is looking at races like the Haskell and the Travers. So yeah, strike while the iron's hot, get out there and try and win the Preakness. And you know, if Epicenter were to win the Preakness, I think there's a very decent chance he's brought right back in the Belmont because we've seen Asmussen do this before, and I think he can be productive in the latter half of the year, even having run in all of those races. Asmussen's a guy that has a lot of bottom in his horses, mm-hmm. and they generally are able to produce, keep their form going for a while.
That is all the time we have for today's podcast. I want to thank my friend Nick Tamara for coming on for the Daily Kentucky Derby podcast. We've done this now 3 years in a row. Hoping to see you next year for year number four, Nick.
Pleasure was all mine, Spencer. I look forward to it.
The Money Media Network. I also want to thank my special guest, Nick Tamara, for coming on and talking Kentucky Derby Saturday from this past Saturday at Churchill Downs. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's president is Pierre Thomas Morintel. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. And our In the Money Media business manager is Drew Cotney.
I'm Spencer Lugenbuehl. We will see you next time.